Sentinel Online. Now loading the Beast Unleashed podcast.
This is the Beast Unleashed podcast special interview of Ian Corlett. I am TFG1 Mike, and I am joined by Steve Megatron. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, and in a few moments we are going to have the astute privilege of speaking with Mr. Ian Corlett, who, as we all know, voiced Cheetor in Beast Wars and Beast Machines. Mr. Corlett has also done a number of other things. He is the narrator or the voice announcer for the ABC Family Channel. He was Dr. Wily in Captain N, the Game Master. He's just done a whole bunch of other stuff. Steve actually got the interview for us. It's the only interview so far that I have not had any interaction as far as getting it.
Yes, that is very awesome.
Yes, very, very awesome. Without any further ado, here is our interview of Ian Corlett, also known as Cheetor.
Shields are doing a major fade! Hey, look at me! I'm a cheetah! No, I'm Cheetor!
Interesting.
Interesting? Optimus, the word is spot on smooth. It's a crime. Hey, I wonder what these gizmos are for. Hey, how do you work these things?
Whoa! In fact, I think it's time to shred some bread.
What do you say we give these new bods a test drive? I am transformed.
Hello, and welcome to the Beast Unleashed interview. My name is Stephen Phillips, and I'm joined with one of my Beast Unleashed co-hosts, Mike Blanchard.
Hello.
Today we have a super awesome privilege to interview Ian Corlett. Yes, sir. That's right, the voice of Cheetor is on the line with us. Hello, Ian.
Hello, everyone.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Very, very cool. Can you give us a quick summary of your upbringing and how you became a voice actor?
Well, I was raised in a juvenile detention facility. And, no, I wasn't. but it sounded like a good story, didn't it?
Yeah.
No, I was born and raised in a suburb of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, called Burnaby, and spent my early days as a filmmaker, as a young kid, entered a lot of competitions and that sort of thing, and that gave me a real interest in the process and storytelling and animation and all sorts of things. So I'm a bit of a unique voice actor in the sense that I came at it from filmmaking and, you know, did my voices for my own productions and then, you know, kind of found out that I was reasonably good at it. And then we didn't really have a film industry and certainly didn't have an animation industry in Vancouver when I was growing up, but eventually animation started to come to Vancouver because of some very favorable work conditions and union contracts, etc. Mm-hmm. And I was already voicing radio commercials and television commercials and that sort of thing when the work started to come here, and I went, hey, look at that, that's what I used to do as a kid. So I started, I think my first cartoon here was, there was several all at once, but one of the biggest ones was Captain N, the Game Master.
Dr. Wily.
Dr. Wily.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that show.
So that's the brief history, and then, you know, that was in the sort of mid-80s when that work started to come to Vancouver, and then I just kept working and working and working and working, and actually ended up going full circle after lots of success in voice. I started to write for some cartoons, and then from that I sort of spun that into creating a couple of my own series and working on creating series for other peoples. Man, I sound like a German exchange student. so I've done a whole lot of stuff in animation.
Very, very cool.
Awesome.
If you could still be working on any one show that you've worked on in the past, what would it be?
Ooh, well, boy, that is a loaded question. I gotta say that, and this isn't because I very recently worked on it, because, you know, sometimes you have a really good experience and it's the freshest one in your memory, but I had an opportunity last year to work on a show called Dinosaur Train for the Jim Henson Company and PBS.
Mm-hmm.
And it was particularly special because both my kids were cast as the lead characters in this show. And as if that wasn't enough, I got cast as well, I think mostly because I was the driver and could transport them to the studio. But anyway, mercifully, they gave me a job out of it. But the work environment was just so much fun and so great that I want to do more. And it sounds like we will. Now, second to that, because it does seem like a bit of a cop-out to say, oh, yeah, that was the best show I ever did, because it was the one I most recently did. But it really was magical, really special group of people to work with. It was just really fun. And working with my kids was really neat, too. Now, setting that aside and, you know, thinking about the audience and you guys and not trying to pander to you, but I must say Beast Wars was really fun as well. It was just because it ended up being such a big production. I had no idea. I mean, I knew what Transformers were, and I knew that there was a fan base, but I had no idea that it was kind of like Star Trek, you know? I mean, in terms of the size and the
scope.
Intensity.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The fans are just incredible. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, one of the highlights of my career, being involved in a show like that. So that would be really high up the list.
Yeah. Incidentally, if I had to pick throughout Beast Wars and Beast Machines, I would have to say, and I'm not trying to just, you know, impress you or whatever, but Cheetor is my favorite character because of the simple fact that he has such similarities to Rodimus Prime from the original show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cheetor's awesome.
Thank you. I only played a small part in bringing him to life, but I just wish that they would do something with the Beast Wars characters in the next Transformers movie.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I don't know if I would want to see that. As much as I would love to hear you voicing him again, I don't know if I want to see what Michael Bay does to Beast Wars. That would be kind of scary.
So, well, okay, so tell me, is that your opinion of both the Transformers movies, or just the last one, or what?
It's one of those things where the first one was good. It was nice to see that you could adapt it to live action, and it's nice to see that, obviously, I mean, Transformers has this 25, 26-year-old history. It's nice to see that they're furthering that, I think, but I just, watching those films back now after, I mean, the first movie's been out 2-3 years, the second movie came out last year, honestly, I don't like those films.
Mm-hmm. I know. I have heard this sentiment from others. Almost universally, none of the real fans like the second movie.
Yeah.
No.
Which I didn't see.
You're not missing anything.
It's a lot of, like, they have some more bathroom humor and a lot more expletives in the movie.
Yeah.
Just things that could have been put on the editing floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny, you know, and then you think about the other big, well, they're comic book based, but the one that comes to mind is Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we've had bad ones and really good ones, you know, so I guess it really depends on how the material is handled.
Yeah, it does. Steve, you want to take the next one there?
Where would you have liked to have taken your characters?
All the way to the bank. A little voice actor humor there, sorry. Are you speaking specifically of, Beast Wars characters, like Cheetor and the, computer, oh shoot, what's his name? The computer.
Sentinel,
thank you.
Just in general, are there any characters that say a show ended before you had a chance to develop them more than say you wanted to?
Oh, okay, that's that's a very interesting question. You know, it's funny when you're as far down the food chain as we are as voice actors, you don't really get a chance. In my opinion, anyway, to develop characters too much anyway. I mean, it seems kind of mean to say that, but, you know, we bring a certain amount to the characters, but, you know, when the show is written, that's really where the real meat of it comes from. And, you know, I mean, I'm always sad. If a character just kind of, especially if one was really fun,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly it's gone, you know.
Oh yeah.
You just kind of want to keep doing it, but in terms of an arc or a development, most of that honestly comes from the writing, and I have to give the writers complete credit for that.
Yeah.
Out of all of the characters that you've played in your vast career, who are your favorites?
Well, I really enjoyed Andy Larkin from What's With Andy. That was a show that originally started on Fox Kids. I don't know if it really continued in the U.S. too much, but it got picked up again in Canada, and they did a whole bunch more episodes. So that was really fun. I really enjoyed Coconuts. From the old
Sonic Underground,
Sonic the Hedgehog,
yeah.
Series, just because I liked it. It was a fun voice to do. What else? Yeah, I think that was probably my favorite fun voice,
mm-hmm.
and it was also a really fun show to work on. I mean, that was with Phil Hayes and Long John Baldry and Gary Chalk. So it was. And it was pretty much just the three of us in the studio, actually Long John would come in and out, but so the four of us. But those were pretty crazy sessions. They were pretty fun.
Speaking of Gary Chalk, didn't he used to stare at you during Beast Wars sessions?
Oh, he didn't just stare at me. he did a lot of other things that involve vapor. just put it that way. I don't know if he's got some sort of internal digestive issues, but that man produces far more gas than any human really needs to. And I had the joy of standing next to him during all the sessions, and he would, you know, please pull my finger, pull it. No, Gary, I'm not going to pull your finger. Oh, come on, pull your finger. No, I'm not going to pull your finger. And then he'd pull it himself, and, you know, ha, 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 ha. So that was my biggest issue with Gary. I love Gary. Everyone loves Gary.
Everyone loves
bigger
Gary.
Than life.
Yeah.
He is a character. I'm a little unusual when it comes to, you know, stereotypical voice actors, because I'm not, like, I'm a performer when I'm in front of the mic and I've got my lines to do, and but I pretty much shut down after that, and I like to at least appear to be somewhat normal.
Yeah.
And not that these guys are abnormal. Talking about my peers as if they're on the funny farm or something, but you know, they really are larger than life, a lot of them. And you know, while I'm working, sure, I do the crazy voices, and there is a certain amount of levity and fun that is inherent to a good voice session. It really should be there, but I just tend to you know, do my stuff and, you know, try to make some jokes and make people laugh, and then that's it. Like, what you're hearing right now is pretty much me. So I get all sorts of reactions to my personality, from why is he so grumpy to you know, people that actually enjoy my sense of humor. But in contrast to Gary, I usually just like to kind of sit back and mind my own business and choose my spots for the big gags. But it, you know, I like to have lots of fun in sessions, but I also like to get out of there. I like to do my work and move on to the next one. Just because, you know, it's no fun dragging out things longer than they have to be. So yeah. I think I'm babbling now.
No, it's okay.
That's fine.
What type of, you know, you're talking about your characters, whether you know, you make the jokes or whatever. What type of character do you like playing better? Good guys, bad guys, serious characters, or funny characters?
Well, it's got to be, and this is probably the answer that you get from everyone, it has to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
And then second to the bad guy, or equal to the bad guy, would be a really, really broad comedic character.
Mm.
The choice for me to do Cheetor was really unusual. Like, I've played heroes before, but that was definitely the one that put me on the map as a, you know, sort of a young hero voice. And it was very strange for me, because my stock and trade for pretty much my whole career was the character voice, the crazy voice, the weird voice. So, you know, when I'm playing essentially a voice that's me, it's pretty weird. You guys mentioned it when we first dialed up, you know, it's like, oh, hey, you sound like Cheetor. Yeah, I do.
Well, you know, it's funny, there's only two voice actors that I know of, yourself and Barry Gordon, who Barry Gordon played Donatello in the original Turtles series in the 1987 cartoon. He sent his own voice. That's, you know, some voice actors have to change their voice to make,
right.
Like David Kaye has to change his voice to be the Megatron character.
Sure.
And you guys don't, which is kind of, it, you know, I was like, I was thinking even before you messaged us or got on the call here, I'm like, okay, so I know what Cheetor sounds like. I've listened to some of his other promos. I wonder how close his own voice is to any of the characters. And, you know, you're Cheetor.
I know.
Speaking of Cheetor, he had, I believe it was, four different models throughout Beast Wars and Beast Machine. He had the original, the Transmetal 1, Transmetal 2, and then what he was in Beast Machines. Which one is your favorite?
The on screen?
Yeah.
I liked Beast Machines. That's my personal favorite. And, you know, again, I've heard much opinion on the various designs and episodes and everything. I think the reason I liked that was because I really felt that Mainframe and the director at that time, that was really the creative driving force, was Ace Fipke, who went on to start his own company called Nerdcore and was very successful and as a producer and a creator of shows. But he was really trying to take that, what was turning into sort of a standard, mainframe 3D animation look, and he was trying to make something different. And I think he succeeded. In my opinion, it was exactly what that show needed, to kind of give it a new, fresh look and not make it look like that fluid 3D animation that was so prevalent at that time.
Yeah.
And he basically made it look like a moving, immersive comic book. And I really liked that. So that's the reasons behind my particular choice.
Very cool. I think the next one's yours, Steve.
How did you like doing jumping over from regular animation to anime such as Dragon Ball Z?
Well, that is a very interesting and very long story. Dragon Ball Z came to me as kind of a producer. It was really strange. We were working with a company in Vancouver called BLT Productions, who was doing some amount of reversioning and revoicing for foreign cartoons. And these guys came, they were from Texas, the guys from Funimation, and they didn't look like entertainment people at all. They looked like sort of corporate guys from Texas, you know, super nice people. And they were kind of, somehow they found this project. I'm not really sure what the history was behind it, but they found themselves with this animation project in their hands, and they said, we need to reversion this into English, and we hear that, you know, you guys know what you're doing. So between a partner and myself, we ended up rewriting the very, very first English version Dragon Ball Z episodes. And as a result, I ended up, I don't think I cast myself, I think I got cast somehow as, oh shoot, what's his name? Goku?
Goku, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm getting old, I'm getting really old. I don't remember anything. What am I doing? Anyway, so we're reversioning this this Dragon Ball Z series, and I'm going, what? You know, it's just another series to me that's in Japanese, and dealing with all the things that you have to cut out. Speaking of pee, there was, you know, all sorts of just the weirdest stuff in those Japanese cartoons. Anyway.
Oh yeah.
So I had to. I was reversioning it, and you know, so in terms of the history, at least in North America, of Dragon Ball Z, I mean, I guess I'm kind of a founding father when it comes to that stuff. So to answer your question, past the history, as strictly a voice talent, because I did a whole bunch of it, frankly, I just got really tired of it. And it wasn't to do with anything other than the simple economics. I found that, you know, I was spending a whole day replicating screams and yells and like at high volumes and being absolutely exhausted by the end of the day. And the company, not BLT, this was not the company I just mentioned, but the group that was doing the production and overseeing the production by that time had found their own interpretation of the union contracts, and basically what it meant, long story short, was, you know, we were being paid by the line, literally like pennies, and it didn't they didn't even count the loud screams. And of course, as you fans will know, you know, in the anime, mm-hmm. half the show is a scream of some sort.
Oh yeah,
they wouldn't even count those as a line. So they said, well, no, that's a vocalization. That's not any words. You just have to do that. You throw that in for free. Oh, okay.
Wow.
So then I said, well, if I'm not going to get paid for vocalizing, I'll just leave those parts out. You can get someone else to do those. So, of course, that was kind of an aggressive stance, but I just didn't want to do it anymore. So I stopped and have not worked for that company in 15 years.
Can
so
you,
that's that's my history with anime, and really they were the ones that did the vast majority of it.
Yeah. Are there any behind the scenes moments during Beast Wars, Beast Machines, or any of the other cartoons that you've done, like Captain N or anything, that you can kind of reveal to us?
Well, aside from Gary's flatulence, that's ongoing. Any series. pity the person that has to stand beside Gary Chalk. Well, there's that. Let me just think here. You know, I should really be prepared with some anecdotes, shouldn't I? If I was a proper voice actor interviewee, but I'm not a proper voice actor interviewee. I'm not very good at this.
We still love you, man. It's okay.
Yeah,
well,
it's
that's
cool.
I appreciate that. you know, I envy. You know, I make fun of Gary, mm-hmm. but I know he's a great interview, and same thing with Scott McNeil. I mean, those guys just—they flick their switch, and you are the beneficiaries of the greatness that those guys just spew.
Mm.
I'm kind of I can't remember things. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't remember names. I don't have stories. I've got nothing. So I've got a funny story that involves my good friend Gary Chalk. It seems like I'm spending my whole interview talking about him, but. Anyway, it took place at the recording of Sonic the Hedgehog, and one of my special skills as an actor is the ability to rip off a really good belch on cue. And often, you know, it's a thing that comes up so often in cartoons, incredibly often. And if I'm in the cast, no matter who it's supposed to be, they usually just go, Ian, just get in here and do it. And I will jump in and burp on cue. So this time, Gary thought that he could handle it himself. And he said, No, I'm going to burp. It's okay, I can do it. So someone gets him a Coke, and he takes a couple of gulps of it, you know, for fuel. And he tries to let out a burp. and he vomits. I mean, it's not. He didn't really puke, but it was like the you know, the fizziness of the head of
oh, yeah.
Coke
mm-hmm.
came gushing out of his mouth and kind of went bleh all over his script. And someone has it on tape somewhere, and you can actually hear it foaming. And the poor girl that was standing next to him leaping out of the way with an eek, and that's my one funny insider anecdote. Don't allow Gary Chalk to burp on cue. Just get a professional to do it.
Yeah.
Next one's yours, Steve.
What's the next one? Because you told me to skip the
humorous,
one.
Bizarre.
Okay. What is the most bizarre or humorous audition story you've ever had?
Audition? The last one? I wish I had a funny one. The ones that I remember are usually really, really, really sad. You know, where you're getting just put through the ringer to try to get a gig, and it's just not working, you know. And you think, well, why don't you? If I'm not the guy, just tell me to leave. You know, that's usually my attitude. Oh man, I honestly don't have a funny story for you at all on that one.
That's cool. Which voice actors did you most look up to when you were first starting, and which voice actors do you still look up to that are still around today?
Well, Mel Blanc, of course, number one. Dawes Butler, it was huge for me because he did so many classic voices, but mostly because he was part of the Stan Freberg radio comedy gang. And I just found that I had a very similar kind of range to him, so I just loved listening to anything Dawes Butler did. And in terms of living legends, I'm happy to say that I have worked with Frank Welker before, and he was just such a sweet, nice guy. I thought he was fabulous, and of course, incredibly talented. I mean, your fans will know who all these guys are, but he paid me such a nice compliment. I was working in L.A., and I was kind of the fly-in guy. I was just doing a guest voice on a show called Totally Spies.
Mm.
And he was sitting there, and I was doing my thing, and he was sitting right beside me, and in between takes, he was kind of going, where are you from? I haven't seen you around. And I said, well, that's because I'm from Vancouver. I'm just in town doing another project right now, and I got hired on this. He goes, oh, that's why I haven't seen you, because you're really good. And I just about fell over. It's like, whoa, Frank Welker said I was good. Wow, neato. But he was really, really a nice guy, I'm just telling that story for that very reason, not because he said that I was good. But it was just, it was really cool to meet him, because, I mean, I remember him just forever.
Which voice actors that you've worked with are you closest friends with in real life?
I would say closest friends. That's a good one. I keep in touch very regularly with Phil Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that I always talk to, and kind of like sort of like extended family, I guess.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always mean, you know, you're really close friends. It's just, no, they're kind of like family, which is, you know, there's sort of a connection there. It's David Kay, I stay in touch with all the time. And those are two guys that actually moved to Los Angeles. They live in LA now. But, you know, I'm probably closer with a director. Her name is Andrea Romano,
who I
classify as a very good friend. And she's also in Los Angeles. Maybe there's a pattern happening here. I like to keep my friends as far away as possible.
That's happening.
But those people I spend a lot of time with. And you know who's I am missing out one. Dale Wilson, who I think he must have done something on Transformers, but he's a well-known voice that you guys will, if you don't recognize the name, if you Google him, you go, oh, that guy. I stay in touch with Dale a lot as well.
Okay. We just have four more questions for you. Steve, take the next one.
There are lots of different types of voiceover work. Which do you prefer the most out of cartoons, commercials, movies, video games, or anything else in the voiceover world?
I love a good commercial. I really enjoy doing commercial work. They're all fun in their own way. It has to be probably commercials and cartoons are my favorite. I'm not a big fan of dubbing. I you know, for all the reasons that I mentioned before.
Yeah.
But it's okay. You're kind of hamstrung by the movement that's there that you have to match, and that's why dubbing often sounds kind of weird, because you're really not allowed to act too much. I mean, you try, but that's the reason it would be lower down the list.
Very cool. One of my buddies, it's very rare when we do interviews, I try to keep them as secret as possible, and I don't tell anybody. I don't advertise it until after we've done it.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception, I usually include most of our co-hosts here on Geekcast Radio Network, so I asked my buddy, I said, is there any questions that you would like to ask Ian Corlett that, you know, that we can ask for you? And one of them was, do Dragon Ball Z fans scare you?
No, not really. No, but I was really, really shocked and amazed at the stuff that I saw on the internet, you know, and this is in the early days of the internet, after I stopped voicing Dragon Ball Z. It was like, wow, this is really incredible. that there's this many people that have such strong opinions on this stuff. But other than that, I mean, they don't scare me, not at all. It's just like I'm impressed. It's, you know, it's kind of neat, actually.
Have you, how many conventions have you been to? Because my next question basically states that you've been to some of the various Comic-Con fan conventions and stuff like that, and basically what is your opinion of these conventions and impressions
of
them?
I think they're great. I always, whenever I have done them, and I don't do a lot of them, I think I've been to a grand total of 3. Just because, whatever reason, I just, you know, the scheduling or the opportunity isn't there or whatever. But every time I come away from one, I think, wow, you know, it's really neat that people are so into something. You know, I mean, you can easily spend your life not really being interested in anything. And I always think that that's really fun. And the people that I get a real kick out of or really bring a smile to my face at the conventions are the kids. Like, when you see a little kid coming to one of those conventions, like, they're there usually not because their parent is the fan. It's them. And, you know, it would be like kind of like going to Disneyland for your first time. You know, you're immersed in this world that you just love. And, you know, that's pretty impressive to me. But I've been to BotCon in Fort Wayne almost 10 years ago now. I've been to one in Vancouver that was just the year before last, and then last summer I did a convention in Birmingham, England called Auto Assembly.
Yep.
And that was really cool. It was the smallest one that I've been to and the most fun, just because of where it was and the organizers and the, you know, it was good.
You're not going this year, are you?
No, I have not been invited.
That's funny, because two of your cohorts are the special guests, Gary and Scotty, both.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy.
We're going, yeah. All right, just one more question. What is it, Steve?
In your opinion, how hard would you say it is to make it into voice acting business, and do you have any advice for people who are starting out?
Don't give up. If you feel that you're talented, don't give up. Although, if you keep getting the message from, you know, people that actually know or you respect, you know, that maybe you should try something else, you have to decide when that right time to say, I think I'll try something else is. But until such time, don't give up. You know, it is tough. It's a really tough business to get into, and it's harder every day to get into it, because more and more people want to do it. But, you know, that doesn't mean, just because it's difficult or the numbers are stacked against you, doesn't mean that you shouldn't try for it. So that's my advice with anything to do with in life. Just keep at it. Don't give up.
Before we go, can you do you want to plug anything? Your website, you know, where people can interact with you or anything like that?
Go to www.ianjamescorlett.com, and you'll see basically, you know, whatever is happening. I don't get it updated all the time, but you'll certainly get an idea of what I'm working on and what I'm doing, and there's an email address to contact me. And for any of you people who have kids or have friends who have young kids, I have written a book that is available on Amazon and in your local Barnes & Noble, etc., called E is for Ethics. So it's a totally different part of my life from voice acting, but it's a family book for parents to read with their kids that opens up fun conversations on kind of difficult topics to talk about, values and ethics and morals, but it's not all heavy. It's actually really fun, and kids like it, and tell your friends and buy a book.
Didn't you just announce this morning on your Twitter about the new book?
Yes, yeah, I got a new book deal, and it's the follow-up to this book. So this one is titled E is for Ethics. The new one is called E is for Environment, and it It features the same two characters, and we're actually in development with Playhouse Disney Canada to make an animated series called Elliot and Lucy based on these two characters as well. So if all goes well, they'll be on the small screen in another year or so.
Cool.
So that's what I'm up to.
Yep. All right. We would like to thank Mr. Crowley for taking the time to chat with us in this special Beast Unleashed All Things Transformers interview. Hold the line, Ian, and we will be right back after this.
Hey. This is Cheetor, and you're listening to the Beast Unleashed podcast, Ultra Gear.
Wow, that was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I gotta apologize to you. I know this was the first interview you actually got for us. I didn't mean to kind of run all over it with the questions.
That's fine.
It's one of those things where I think it's because Cheetor is my favorite character. And, you know, Ian said it himself in the interview, when he's done with his work, he likes to just get out of there. And honestly, before you even, you know, I was actually, my jaw dropped and I almost fell out of my chair when you told me that you had found him on Twitter and sent him a message and for an interview and all that stuff, because he is one of those people where he said it himself again in the interview that he's only been to like 3 or 4 conventions. He's not a Transformers voice actor that is that deep in the fandom like Gary Chalk, like David Kaye, like Scott McNeil. However, he's still awesome as hell.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was just awesome.
Yeah, it was still a super awesome privilege to get him on.
Yes, that was very, very, very cool. Yeah, just very, very cool. I don't know what else to say. It's like one of those things where I think it's because he voices one of my favorite characters, which is Cheetor, that is just like speechless. It's like if we ever, which I highly doubt we'll ever have this, but if we ever got Judd Nelson on here, you probably would hear nothing but silence from me in the outro, kind of like what you're hearing now, but it's just like, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just, wow. That was...
Yep, I can definitely, you know, not blame you on that one.
You know, and he's just a really, really nice guy. He's into everything. You know.
Oh yeah, he's touched a lot of shows that I've watched in the past.
He's touched a lot of shows and stuff, but it's just not. He's, you know, he even said it himself. He's not your average voice actor interviewee, because I mean, yes, he's done a lot of voices and stuff, but as he said, it you know, at the end of the day, he wants to go home and leave work at work, and you know,
which is respectable. I mean, I can understand that.
Oh yeah, very much so. You know, but he's just a joy to have talked to him. You know, and it's funny. I said in the interview to him, you know, when you know, I know what Cheetor sounds like. You know, I know what Dr. Wily sounds like. And I was wondering how close his own voice was to any of his characters. And I thought, you know, a lot of voices, as I said in the interview, and I'm sorry for everybody listening to this that I'm repeating myself from what I said in the interview, but I just have to, I'm trying to rationalize it here. You know, people like David Kaye, like Tom Kenny, they change their actual voice from, you know, four characters. Ian, he is Cheetor. he even went, yeah, I know. You know, but it's just his natural voice is Cheetor's voice. And that's just awesome.
Yeah, that was really, really cool to hear.
Yes. So this has been, well, I should say, do you have any other thoughts? I've kind of been running the whole thing here, and
I can honestly say before going back into Beast Wars this time around for, you know, our review podcast. I kind of not really... I mean, I liked Cheetor, but I didn't really, like, pay that much attention to him. But the more I watch it, the more he stands out to me.
Yeah.
The more I like that particular character. I mean, of course, Megatron is my favorite, but as far as Maximals, I pretty much like just about all of them. The only one I can't really stand is, I think, Silverbolt.
See, I like Silverbolt. Silverbolt has his moments.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and we can get into this further later down the line. I don't want to really bring it up in this interview outro, but yeah, I mean, you know, I've said this tons of times before. Cheetor is the character throughout the entire series, and I don't just mean Beast Wars or then later Beast Machines. I mean the entire era, where he has the most character development, plot driving stuff. Like, I would say when we first see him in the first episode, before we even see him, I would say Cheetor in his original mold, in his original, you know, cheetah thing, I would say he's probably between 10 and 12. When he hits Transmetal 1, I would say he's around 15, 16, maybe 17. When he hits Transmetal 2, I would say, and this is just me, you know, just throwing this out there, I would say he's about 21 or 22. And then when he goes to Beast Machines, he's at least easily 30 years old. Because of all the character growth that he has had all three seasons of Beast Wars, both seasons of Beast Machines.
Yeah, he's had quite a bit of character development. Probably, I would have to say between him, Primal, and Megatron have had the most over the entire series. But yep. Probably Cheetor has had the highest amount of character development.
Oh, yes. Yes. So, again, this has been the Beast Unleashed interview of Ian James Corlett, voice of Cheetor. Join us next time when we will be... it'll be episode 9... and we will be doing our final three episodes, Before the Storm, and Other Voices, Parts 1 and Part 2. So we'll see you next time.
Later.